You're listening to Here to Help on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Imagine all the barriers you'd face if you couldn't read. How would your day-to-day life change? Not being able to read as an adult makes every day a little bit harder. The grocery store can be confusing. Taking the bus can be frustrating, and a basic conversation can become embarrassing. According to the Literacy Project Foundation, illiteracy in the U.S. has gotten so bad that 44 million adults can't read a story to their own children. Some have handled their literacy problems most of their lives, so they think it's too late to change. But there are individuals who want to read. Where can they turn? Adult literacy programs are available in most U.S. public libraries. They provide volunteer-based services for those seeking help in reading, writing, and speaking. Almost anyone can participate to get help or volunteer as a tutor. The library staff pairs a learner with a tutor. The tutor's primary focus is on the learner's goals, which range from getting extra help in college courses to learning English as a second language. On this episode of Here to Help, we travel with producer Danny Hayes to the Santa Barbara Public Library in California to discover how teaching someone to read can change a life.
Jada never really struggled with communicating until she had to put her thoughts down on paper. And it wasn't until she moved to Santa Barbara a couple years ago that she reached out for help.
When I lived in San Francisco, I actually knew that I needed help learning. I always had struggled through school, and I knew that I had a problem, but what I did was kind of modeled my language from watching television, so I sound different than what is literally there. I wanted to learn how to put stuff on paper, to write it and to have it read with ease. So basically, when I moved here, for some reason, I felt brave enough to reach out for help.
Jada had to face a huge barrier, and that was her lack of confidence.
As much as I knew I needed help, I also felt like if I got a tutor, I had an issue with not being smart enough a lot with my friends, and I felt like the depth of them really getting, because now I have a tutor, would be intimidating for me with them.
Now, meet Anne, Jada's tutor. She tells Jada what she thought about her in the beginning.
Well, there was never any question with me when I, after an hour of talking to you, that all of this insecurity and everything just wasn't going to cut the mustard. Just had to go. So I just spent the rest of the time just kind of chipping away at you.
These two seem like a perfect match. Anne understood Jada, and Jada's confidence skyrocketed.
I think when I met Jada, very early discovered that she's extremely bright, has a very visual, creative way of processing information, just had not had the same advantages as a lot of people in life, nor had her particular learning style been honored.
As soon as I saw her, I knew, like, I was in good hands. Like, I felt like the little angel came in. And it's been that way. It's been the angel. Yeah, I felt she was heaven sent.
The pairing of a tutor and a learner is an act of chance and fine-tuning. Jada had a few other tutors before she was paired up with Anne.
I noticed with one I actually felt a little scared again, intimidated and nervous, and I was actually acting out. It felt exactly the same as when I was a kid reading. It felt really hard, and even though I was accomplishing and moving forward, it was still the same energy that kept me from wanting to do it in the first place. And with Anne, I noticed just the level of ease and encouragement from myself. Like, I feel like I want to do it for her.
Anne was able to break down Jada's walls of insecurity. She found that Jada needed one basic thing, and that was encouragement.
What I saw is that given the encouragement and just pulling back the curtains and letting her see who she really is, we just started, just jumped into writing. Let's just start writing these things. Let's just go for it. Just do free writing for a while. And I really believe, you know, punctuation, grammar, all of that can be worked on. That's the tweaks. The important thing is discovering this voice in this woman who started to come across. It was letting her find her voice. And then we can always go in and put a comma in, as far as I'm concerned. That's what you teach to, is finding the voice. And then we'll get the little details cleared up. I told her after the first 6 months, I told you I see a rising star.
And with that dose of encouragement, Jada grew in confidence with Ann's support.
She's just changed me. I feel so grateful and understood and appreciated for where I am, understood for where I am. She believes in it.
Yeah, and we had a lot of meltdowns.
I'm so happy she can see something that I can't, you know. So being seen in that way and know that I matter or might be important, you know, is really exciting.
The relationship these two have goes beyond literacy.
I would say it feels nourishing in a way that feels very motherly. You know, I feel like I finally needed, or I finally got like the holding I needed to know that the world's okay, to be honest.
It's quite a compliment.
The thing I can't help but admire is the relationship between these two women. It's a unique relationship that I felt privileged to witness. They speak so highly of each other. Another product of long-term service like this is the relationships that form. Bev, who is the program's coordinator, speaks a little bit more about this.
So I've been doing this for 12 years, and one of the things I've seen is really lifelong friendships. And I think you talk to some people who have built those friendships and lifelong support networks, not reliance, but to help maintain that feeling of confidence, to know that there's somebody in the community who understands what you're going through and supports you.
Another partnership I got to meet was Daniel and June. June is from South Korea and came to California to go to graduate school. And he came to the library to get help with his English.
I wanted to improve my English skill, you know, especially in speaking English, because, you know, I think many Asians have good skills, you know, in writing, reading and listening, but instead, you know, speaking and writing is not good enough. So I was kind of lack of, you know, speaking and writing in English language. So I wanted to learn more here because this is a good chance to learn with native speakers.
Daniel tailors his lessons to fit June's goal. He finds something that interests June, and they just talk. This week's lesson is about idioms. Not because June needs to learn about idioms, but because Daniel knows this will start a conversation.
I was thinking about idioms.
Okay, yes. Yes,
and
that's good.
So I was interested in idioms based mostly on numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the terms that we use, and this is, I guess, more slang than an idiom, so the term 86.
86?
So to be 86th means to be barred from an establishment. So you get kicked out of somewhere.
Oh, okay. And so it's like kind of, you know, how to say, it's, for example, it's, you know, when someone in the kind of restaurant or, you know, if the, you know, behavior
right.
of the
right.
if their behavior is not good.
If their behavior is too bad.
Okay.
Then you can be permanently banned.
Why it is expressed as, you know, with the number 86?
I read an article on that, and they had maybe 20 different theories. One of them was that there was a bar on, it was the number 86 uh-huh. on the street.
Oh, okay.
And so during Prohibition,
uh-huh.
Are you familiar with Prohibition?
Prohibition, yeah, it's kind of, you know, prohibits something.
Right. I mean, so we call it the era of Prohibition.
Era.
Right. So okay. in the 1920s, uh-huh. They made it a national law in uh-huh. the United States that alcohol was illegal.
Oh yeah, you mentioned. Yeah, you explained earlier. Yeah. So actually, it's failed, right?
Eventually, yeah, it was overturned.
Uh-huh.
So I think part of it was they. Would have to, you know, warn people of the police coming
uh-huh.
at the number 86 bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, another one was that they had a drink menu,
mm-hmm.
and the 86th item
uh-huh.
was the most popular, so it was often sold out.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So there are a lot of theories, but, and nobody knows exactly where it
I cannot grasp what is the connection between the sort out and the kicking out somebody.
So I guess the idea that it's not here, and so you're not here.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, thank you. That's funny.
Something like that.
Okay.
It's a way to give back that takes such a little sliver out of your life, but adds so much to other people's lives. We don't have to do these incredibly huge, headline sort of service. It's just a little day-to-day little thing that really impacts someone's life, and it's empowering.
This is Sherry. She's been a tutor for years and feels strongly about serving locally.
I think it's so important. Sometimes we look at the big opportunities for service, the huge headliner services, but we have to realize that every single person is important and that the person next to us on the bus or down the street, God wants you to help them just as much as the person suffering in the earthquake, and we need to look around our neighbors, our people next door, the people we see at the grocery store. They all need love and attention and compassion, and we all need to help each other. And everybody needs something. And if we can give something, then I think we need to give it. I think when they talk in the scriptures about when did I see you hungered and give you something to eat? When did I see you thirsty and give you something to drink? When did I see you in the jail and go visit? Those are the things we need to be accountable for, that there's people around us every day that we can help some way or another. And that's kind of what we're here for, to help everybody.
There's a story from World War II about a bombing that destroyed a church in France. Included in the damage was a statue of Jesus Christ. Workers repaired all except for the hands. Falling beams had shattered them. The church leaders debated on whether to fix the statue entirely or not. They decided not to repair the hands, leaving a symbolic lesson that the people are Christ's hands. Sherry relates the story to service.
I think that's really true. We are God's hands, and He could fix everything. But He chooses not to. He chooses to have us be His hands. And we have to take that opportunity to do that. And if we don't, it might not happen. And the blessing of that opportunity is not just for the receiver. I think oftentimes it's the giver is more blessed. And my life is more enriched. And I get so much more out of it. And it makes my week much better. There are weeks that for some reason or other we can't get together. I feel a difference. And it helps me. And maybe it's selfish to give service, because what it gives me is so much more than what I give.
Anne, from the beginning of this episode, thinks the same way Sherry does, and she tells her learner, Jada, how she feels.
People say, you're great to tutor, and this is a cliche, but you get as much out of this process as you give, if not tenfold. You really do. And it is it's an honor for me to see somebody come along like this and improve and really love, even though you don't always admit it, love the process of learning. I mean, you do a lot of griping, but when you send me the newsletter and say, yay, I finished, I feel so good. I feel good, for you, because I you see this work, you see something that takes so little work do so much for another person. And it's just, it's one of the most important relationships I've ever had in my life. At this late stage in my life, it's one of the most important I will ever have.
I want to encourage people that if they have time, to share it with someone, because they can make someone feel very important in the world just by being there a few hours a week and change their life.
Teaching is never a one-time endeavor. We don't just go in and teach a single lesson. And these tutors developed relationships as they worked with them. We'd like to talk more about the unique relationships that we can build as we give long-term service. On our webpage is a link to a Mormon message entitled Lift. We encourage you to go out and watch this really inspiring video. But to give you a sense of what it's about, it tells the story of Kathy, a woman who developed MS. Her husband left her soon after that. Her two boys were grown and couldn't help her, and as her condition worsened, she was unable to take care of herself. She was able to stay in her home. She had a motorized wheelchair, but every morning and every evening, someone had to get her out of bed and then put her into bed. We have in studio with us today John Keller, one of the gentlemen who is featured in this Mormon message called Lift. John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
In this video message, it talks about how your neighborhood and your local church community teamed together to help take care of Kathy. Her boys couldn't come in every morning and every evening to get her, you know, into her chair, etc. And it's a really touching story, but it wasn't easy at first, was it? Tell us a little bit more about Kathy's situation and how much help she actually needed.
Well, with Kathy, in the beginning, it wasn't a really everyday occurrence. It was here and there as she needed help. With Kathy, you know, she did need it in the morning and in the evening. But her sons pretty much took care of that, along with she had been remarried for a time. And so she had a second husband, yeah. And he helped put her in bed and get her out of bed as well. He had some surgery on his shoulder, and at that point the ward would come in now and again to help her when he was having those troubles. Eventually, he needed some back surgery, and he became paraplegic himself. And it was at that time when the boys, one was off working out of state, and so the other boy, it was just really hard for him to get there in the morning to get her out of bed and then back at the evening to put her in. And so at that point is when we kind of started to help her on a more frequent daily basis.
Now, as I watch this video, the way the narrator laid it out said, imagine helping someone 35 minutes. Anyone is willing to help someone once.
Right.
And then said, imagine doing it several days in a row, and then suddenly every day, 365 days a year. So as her condition got worse and as her family was less able to help her, your local community, your church community, had to start coming in twice a day, every day, right?
Yeah. It was in the mornings once in a while, but primarily in the evening. Two men every night.
Mm-hmm. As I was watching this video, it shows two men coming to the house. They get the mail. They open the door. They come in. I mean, I guess all that they were asked to do was to get her into bed. But this is a human being, and so they talked with her. Mm-hmm. They spent time with her, and there's this beautiful scene that after two of them got her into the bed, they prayed with her at night.
Yeah.
So it was very intimate. It was very sweet. But the thing I want to ask you about was your own development on this. I take it you were one of the leaders in your church community at the time and helping organize this. And you said you did this. But there was a time when it became hard, that it felt like a burden, and that you struggled inwardly with your desire to help. Can you lay that out a little for our listeners?
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I was. It was one of my responsibilities to try to align the men to come in at night, and so the responsibility kind of was on my shoulders, and so that was hard for me. When I couldn't find someone, then I basically it fell on me to come in and do it, and my attitude was just such that I felt that it was a burden, and that's when we had multiple discussions. Discussed in many different scenarios on how we could come up with other ways to help her. But for me, it felt very much like a burden, because it was always on my mind, because it was a daily thing that I had to worry about. And so I felt, well, I have my own family, my own things that I need to worry about. And so I was murmuring somewhat as I was doing it.
What turned it around?
Well, a lot of what helped me to get started on that path was the example of someone else in our neighborhood, another leader in our organization. And he had just, you know, we had talked about it, and, you know, we had looked at getting a lift. The consensus was, well, a lift will allow her to be lifted with less you know, force or whatever, but it's not an answer. She can't put herself in the lift.
She still need to have people come.
Yeah, she has no function in her legs, and even her hands and arms are limited. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't even solve the problem. And so I think it got to a point for him with my murmuring to a point where he was just like, you know, if you don't want to do it, and if there's those in your organization who don't want to do it, then that's fine. Don't do it. I'll do it myself. You know, every night if needs be, I will do it. And that just kind of resonated with me and stayed with me, and it kind of made me realize where I was at, which was not at a level that I should be at, especially in a situation where I'm supposed to be an example to those around me and a leader. And it just made me reexamine myself and realize that, hey, you're falling short. You are not being Christ-like. You are not doing what Christ would do in this situation. And so that just propelled me to basically make a decision within my mind and my heart that, okay, I need to change. And so then I started to go in with a different attitude, and that's where it started.
But when you did turn around, did you find yourself opening up to her more? I mean, at the end of the video, it seems like you two developed a pretty sweet relationship, actually.
Yeah. We are great friends now. In fact, when this video was going to be released, the producer, Chris Clark, he let me look at it as an almost finished version, but he let me look at it. And at the time, I did not realize the message and how it was laid out. I didn't realize that I was going to be such a focus. I thought they were asking all the...
Right, because I interviewed several of the other people who come and help.
Yeah, so I didn't realize that. And so when I saw myself there and saw the words coming out of my mouth of how much it was a burden, and, you know, he really wanted us to be honest, and so I was. But that was a real... worry for me, because I knew that Kathy was going to see that. So, you know, luckily I had an opportunity to speak with Kathy before the video actually came out, and I was able to walk through that with her and let her know that that's not how I felt anymore.
And that was your issue, not hers anymore.
Right, right. And, you know, the relationship we had and the reason we were able to gain such a good relationship in many ways was because of Kathy's attitude. And she's just a remarkable person. Mm-hmm. You know, not only, I mean, we come in to help her, but people don't realize how hard if you can imagine how hard it would be when we have someone new move into the neighborhood and things, and we approach them about this, we'll show up with someone brand new that she does not even know, and putting her to bed is a very personal thing. And so for her to be able to allow
someone
that she does not even know, and she is just really good at putting them at ease and at just instantly accepting them and allowing them to serve. And that is not such an easy thing.
Yeah. For those of us who are listening, you don't see John, but John's a really big dude. There's a great scene in this video where he talks about being at the gym, doing his deadlifts, and thinking, these are my Catholic lifts. I'm going to have to be able to lift my friend. And then they cut in the video to him actually by himself. Usually you do it with two people lifting her into bed. And it was very tender, because here's this grown woman with grown sons, life experience, but it looked like a father holding his child. And that really touched me. It brought tears to my eyes, actually. You know, and the other thing I thought of, you know, if that were my mother or my wife or my daughter, I'd want someone like you to step in. And so we really appreciate, John, the example you set for us with that. And the other men in your church community, in your neighborhood, I hope you pass that on to them. And listeners, I hope as you reflect on both these stories, those who work with adult literacy or someone in this very personal situation, it doesn't need to be something grand and glorious we do. Sometimes opportunities for service are right under our noses. They're in our neighborhoods, they're in our families, they're in our communities. And it's a matter of just doing for others what you would hope someone would do for you or your loved ones. So, John, thank you for joining us today. And listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Here to Help on the Mormon Channel.